This week on A Lively Experiment, Rhode Island is awash in extra money. What will state leaders do with it? And the incoming Secretary of State wants to implement rules around voting that he talked about on the campaign trail.
A Lively Experiment is generously underwritten by...
Hi, I'm John Hazen-White, Jr. For over 30 years, A Lively Experiment has provided insight and analysis of the political issues that face Rhode Islanders. I'm a proud supporter of this great program and Rhode Island PBS.
Joining us with their insights, Lisa Ranglin, President and CEO of the Rhode Island Black Business Association, attorney and legal analyst Lou Pulner, and Billy Hunt, Chairman of the Libertarian Party of Rhode Island. Welcome to A Lively Experiment. I'm Jim Hummel. It is great to be back with you again this week. For a state that is used to facing massive budget deficits every year, Rhode Island has the pleasant challenge of what to do with an even greater than expected surplus this year to the tune of $610 million. And it has some asking, is it time to start giving that money directly back to the people who funded that surplus, namely the taxpayers? Lisa, I talked to a public official years ago who said it's a lot easier when you don't have any money because the answer is no to everybody. Yeah. Now we have so much and a lot of people want that money. But are we at the point we should be doing something directly? I don't know, for the taxpayers.
Absolutely, great question. I think with inflation so high, families are hurting, and I think state needs to step up. And really, I think it's really about cutting taxes to do more. You go to the market, food is overpriced, everything, right? I think we need to think about how do we help taxpayers? And I think cutting taxes is a good way to send a strong message that, one, we recognize there's a huge inflation, and we want to help. And I think government needs to step up and do more.
And I think the inflation is what may be fueling some of this. They're taking in more money, and clearly part of that is tax revenue.
No question. I think I agree with Lisa. The state of Massachusetts has a law when they have a surplus that they have to give it back to the people of Massachusetts. They are refunding $3 billion wow, directly to the taxpayers. I know Governor McKee is probably going to say, listen, I already got rid of the car tax. That's enough. But the fact is they can do more. They should do more. And now better and now more than ever is my opinion.
I think I have an idea what the libertarian view is going to be on this.
Libertarians, we, as you know, believe taxation is theft. So that money should certainly be given
easy,
back
right?
to the taxpayers. As Lou mentioned, Massachusetts, you're lowering the tax burden from the 2021 tax year for Massachusetts residents, over 3 million of them, by up to 14%. That would be a big help to a lot of middle-class Rhode Islanders who really haven't had a lot of the benefit of a lot of the federal spending from the stimulus money and everything. We did get the one-time payment or two-time payments directly from the federal government. But, you know, the middle-class, hardworking Rhode Islander that goes to work every day through the pandemic, who doesn't make enough to really be above what's going on with inflation and absorb some of that additional expense, but doesn't makes too much to qualify for a lot of these benefits. They've been really given the short shaft on a lot of this stuff. So I think direct tax relief, eliminating the gasoline tax, something that puts that money directly back into taxpayers' hands would be a great idea.
Billy, you're very ungrateful. You got a $250 child credit. Are you not grateful for that? Come on.
Well, you know, I spent more than that.
What did that pay for, 3 days of daycare or what?
The days that I didn't send them because they were sick. You know, it's definitely something that, you know, you're getting the crumbs. We're talking about what it's been $1 billion over the past 2 years in budget surpluses. And here we are. We got a homeless problem. We got all sorts of issues. It doesn't seem to be helping the average everyday Rhode Islander.
I think that what our state really needs to do is give people an incentive to stay in the state of Rhode Island when they retire. And the long way towards that would be to stop taxing Social Security.
Yeah, or eliminate the estate tax. I mean, part of that increase in the revenue that we had this year is because of the increase of the estate tax.
These things make too much sense, yep. But that's what Rhode Island ought to be doing. We're always leading from behind. Means we're never leading. I'd like to see us change that.
Yeah, and we shouldn't just be waiting until somebody retires, right? We have to think about the young folks that are coming out of college.
We want to keep them here.
We want to keep them in Rhode Island, right? So in order to keep them here, again, when you think of buying a home, they can't afford to buy a home, right? So I think there's lots of things that the state can do to really ensure that families are thriving, not just wait until, I don't want to wait until I'm retired to be able to live a great life, right? And I want to ensure that my child remains in the state and don't have to go work in Mass. So I think reducing some of the tax burden is definitely a win-win for Rhode Islanders.
All of these things make too much sense. But in the meantime, our delegation, which is always a Democratic delegation, just hasn't seen a dollar that they don't want to throw at social services.
They also need to be planning for when all of these federal funds dry up. I mean, just the increase in reimbursements for Medicaid alone accounts for almost 20% of that surplus. So what's going to happen when the federal government starts scaling back some of these additional expenses that they're reimbursing to the state of Rhode Island? Dominic Ruggiero mentioned that he's looking to make one-time investments with this surplus dollars. You know, that's a little bit, you know, it's great to have a big project that's done, but a big project inevitably comes with additional funding to maintain it, to staff it, to, I mean, look at the Providence bridge that they built, and now they don't even have
$2 million to $22 million.
And they don't have the maintenance, the city doesn't have the money to pay for the maintenance of it.
So. But I also wonder, Lou, if that's in the back of their head. How many times have we sat here on this set over the last however many years we've been doing this, $250 million deficit and all of that, and the budget's going up about $1 billion every 4 years. You wonder if in the back of their head, they're like, you know what, it's great now, but in the out years, we don't want to give all this money back to the taxpayers because we may need it to fill that gap. How about putting $200 million in a rainy day fund?
I have no problem with that either. You still got $400 million that can go a long way. Right. We do need a rainy day fund. And how many times, you're right, every year.
They raided it 1 year and I know they refilled it, but they raided it when they needed it. So that's got to go back, right?
You also reimburse the unemployment insurance trust fund that has been depleted significantly from the pandemic. That is an additional tax that's being put on small businesses as they continue to pay for that as we raise up that that fund as well. All these things, could be done to help the average taxpayer, the average business owner, which would do a lot to help the state in general, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on there as it relates to supporting small businesses, mm-hmm. right? But I also think it's important for the state to do more as it relates to people that are struggling to make ends meet, right? So, yes, we want to support small business, and I think it's the right thing to do. But I think, you know, whether it's investing in bringing more affordable homes, like really affordable homes, right? Because we throw a lot of words around affordable, but affordable to whom, right? And I think it's important for us to think about sustainability. So when we think about either one investment in $250 million in housing, but who can afford those properties, right? And then when we think about the lack of homeownership, right, that's also an issue as it relates to generational disparities that we see across the state. So I would challenge, you know, the state to do more as it relates to people that are struggling to make ends meet.
It baffles me that we've had it's the homeless and the affordable housing, and I know they're two different issues, but they're somewhat related. Governor McKee, again, is having problems. He said everything was going to be fine before Thanksgiving. With all this money sloshing around, now I know some people don't want to go to a shelter. You have to be clean and all of that, drug-free. But it seems, why are we having this problem now when we have all this money? I don't get it.
I think the answer to that is how do you spend it wisely?
What's the execution on it? Right?
Yeah, and I certainly don't have the answer for that.
I think there's a lot of smart people in Rhode Island, right, that we can come up with solution that really can fix some of our longstanding problems. I think we need bold leadership, and we need people to say, these are the things that will drive sustainability for the larger amount of people. And I do think all some of that money should also be invested in small businesses, especially those micro businesses that are really struggling, that were impacted by COVID-19.
Well, and that was Lieutenant Governor McKee's wheelhouse all during the pandemic.
Yep.
Sure, and it's carried over, yep. I think.
Yeah. Well, the bureaucracy of state and federal government creates a situation where it's not very efficient to be putting this money through them to get into the hands of the small business owners, to taxpayers, to people looking for affordable housing and everything. This is a bigger systemic issue that, you know, there's a lot of things that the state is trying to do that I think is too much, and that if they focus on, you know, the nuts and bolts of government and doing that good and well and efficient, that it would solve a lot of the problems on the back end for the homeless issue, the affordable housing issue, and everything like that. I mean, take affordable housing, for example. You know, you're dealing with a situation where there's all these constraints. You know, there's students going to school who are getting Pell Grants to fund their college dorms or in very many cases the apartments that they live in that is taking housing away from people who could otherwise afford it. You're dealing with situations where they're limiting in Narragansett. I know they're limiting the amount, number of students.
The occupancy,
So that creates more of an opportunity for fewer housing. You're dealing with all sorts of situations that are external to what the actual ability is for the government to actually just throw money at the situation. And just look at something like the Providence school system. You know, the more money you throw at something doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to get a better result. It's about spending that money efficiently and effectively.
That Narragansett ordinance, though, with limiting the amount of students and one residence was struck down.
And they tried that in Providence, so that's been an ongoing. You know, I wonder, Lisa, is it as simple as I read somewhere, if you gave $1,000 to 300,000 households, you know, that's $300 million right there. I'm sure they don't want to get rid of that, They don't want to lose that much money. But it would be nice if you got something tangible, even if you got $500 to help maybe with the gas or the grocery bill or cut the gas tax. And they've been so resistant to do that. And I wonder why.
I think they're, you know, when I said, again, bold leadership, right, I think folks are trying to be too politically correct. Right. I think they need to really be, let's do it. We have issues. We have challenges in the state. We have $610 million surplus. There are so many things that
plus
we can
the billion
do.
Dollars.
Plus all the
ARPA,
the
right?
ARPA funds that came in. Right. I think when I look across the state, I think everybody wants to, you know, fund their special project, if you will. And they're not really seeing real families that are struggling. You talk about the school system in Providence. That's a huge issue, and we need strong leadership there. I mean, there's no way that our children should be failing. I mean,
generation after generation
generation. We got to solve that, right? There's no way we can really keep reappointing the same people that are failing our kids. Okay. Those are the future, and if we're not investing in our kids, then Rhode Island is going to be dead last.
All right. Come January, we're going to have a few new general officers. One of them is Secretary of State, the incoming Secretary of State, Greg Amore, who has several ideas on the table for voting. We'll talk about that in a second. I have to give a disclosure here. Greg Amore is my brother-in-law. Now, a lot of people don't know that, and this is my worst nightmare as a reporter, right? So I want to, doesn't mean we talk about him any differently, but the full Rhode Island 2 degrees of separation have come to me. Lisa, I know you're on his transition team, so we have multiple disclosures that we need to make. But I just wanted to get that out there. Some of you know because he's been a state rep for 10 years. Lou, let's begin with you. On the issue itself, he's talked about continuing the 20-day early voting, moving the primary to June, and same-day voter registration, which some people take issue with.
You and I don't have disclosures, do we?
No.
We
no disclosure on it. No, you can say whatever you want. Well, you know what? We all say whatever we want, right?
I like his ideas for the most part, your brother-in-law.
Yeah.
And but the fact is I'm not a fan of same-day voter registration. I don't think anybody should be able to walk into a polling place, show a couple of utility bills and an ID, and then just be able to vote. I just think you need to make a commitment if you want to be a voter.
What about early voting?
If there's no ballot harvesting, I'm pretty good with early voting because a lot of people can't wait in line. They can't go on election day. So I think there's merit to that, but the ballot harvesting has got to go.
What about the same day voter registration?
I think access to voting is important to all of us. And I think if there's a U.S. citizen that wants to vote, I think they should have access. I don't see an issue with early voting. I think all the strategy that he's laid out works for me. Again, we want to ensure that we have full participation from U.S. citizens, and if they want to vote on the day off, they should be allowed to vote. And I also believe it's important to have, you know, mail-in ballots. Every access, any way that people can access, I think it's important. We need to get more people in the process. We've seen the last elections, the turnout, right? Again, I know it was raining, but still. But any way or any place or any option that people can vote, I think we should support that.
In 2020, I believe something like 70% of the voters in my race went for early voting or mail-in ballots. And that seemed like it was a little bit untenable. And obviously the pandemic contributed a lot to that.
And you were running for state rep.
State rep, correct. Yep. I mean, this year, you know, I looked at some basic numbers. It's roughly about a third of the voters are opting for that method. You know, I'm not necessarily against the idea of giving people different options about how they want to vote. I think that making it easier for people to vote for the candidates candidates is important. I think it's just as important to make it as easy as possible for candidates to get ballot access, which is one of the things the Libertarian Party is going to be pushing Greg Amore for after our last experience with our last gubernatorial candidate. I think the illusion of choice of making it as easy as possible for people to vote for pre-selected candidates is a big issue in not only Rhode Island, but the nation. In Rhode Island, we're dealing a lot with the one-party Democratic rule. He mentioned something about moving the primary date to June. Again, not necessarily against that either, but you got to think that that puts the declaration date back to like April. It gives a truncated time for people to be able to vet the Democratic candidates in a Democratic primary. And with so many uncontested or non-competitive races in the General Assembly, do we really want to give more people to have a comparison of the Republican and the Democrat or an independent rather than, you know, the Democrats who are the main race in a primary? So I'm not, again, necessarily against any of these ideas. My biggest concern is that the more complicated you make a process, the more opportunity there are for failures. There's a reason why when they have, you know, elections in contested areas in the Middle East or something, there's only day of voting, and, you know, stick your finger and get the ink on your finger so that they know that you vote. If we start throwing in a lot of different avenues and options for people to voting, are we creating a lot of problems, not only for, just fraud or anything, but just for our poll workers or anything, just to be able to maintain and to follow that process? I think that's asking a lot of volunteers.
And you have to wonder also if John Fetterman would have beaten Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania, but for the early voting, which was heavily in Fetterman's favor.
Before that debate.
Before the stroke and before the debate, yeah. And there always can be a last-minute, the October surprise, last-minute scandals. And that's why I think when we were talking about I just want people to be committed.
But I also think it's buyer beware, yeah. Lou. If you vote 20 days before and there's some October surprise, I think one thing that I think that I've heard from people, maybe shorten it to 10 days instead of 20. And I don't know substantially whether that does anything differently.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really around education, right? We got to add education to it as well. So giving people options to vote regardless of the time frame, again, I'm all for accessibility. What I also think it's important, we got to educate, or because we can't just say somebody is volunteering at the polls, so because they're volunteering, the standards are lower. No. We want to make sure that these folks that are working are trained, and we want to make sure the folks that are going to be voting understand the process. But I don't believe that we should limit voting options, and I think we should make sure that people fully understand why they're voting, who they're voting for, and who are on the ballots too often.
But don't you think also the education part is that all of a sudden you wake up and you go, oh, it's election day, and I haven't registered yet. That wouldn't you think the education piece would be, you need to register maybe at least 7 days before the election or 3 days before the election, that you can't just show up. The primary in June argument has always been, and the reason the legislature's never passed it is, the incumbents don't want to be sitting in that building while potentially their rivals. So I think what the incoming secretary is saying is, your session would end a lot earlier, which it usually does during an election year anyway. You get the budget set and get out. But you make a great point that I hadn't thought about declaration.
Yeah.
You have to really have your people on board early on.
I mean, it's difficult for an independent or a third-party candidate to, find a candidate, to get the organization. And now you're talking about April and, you know, that far off before an election season when people aren't necessarily in that mindset. And again, to your point, I think that the benefit of keeping our elected officials honest in terms of budget season and everything like that, and maybe capitalizing on some of that, having the legislative session being fresh in everybody's mind, there might be some benefit to it. But I think just practicality with the lack of resources that even the Republican Party has for some of their down ballot candidates to push that back to April would be a disadvantage to anybody except for the Democratic Party that has the organization right now in the state.
And the incumbency, yeah.
Yep.
All right, we will see how that goes. We are taping on a Wednesday this week. Tomorrow, Thursday, December 1st, recreational marijuana will be available. It's legal now. Don't expect to have a pot shop pop up in your neighborhood anytime soon, even those of you who voted to have it come to their community. This is an awfully long process. It occurs to me, we talked for years about gambling used to be a big deal. Oh, you know, remember 25 years ago, and now it's kind of ho-hum. Remember all those years we talked about, and Dominic Ruggiero didn't want to have the pot go through. I wonder now that it's here whether we're going to see substantial, well, I know, money, Lou's going like this, money, whether we're going to see substantial changes in society, whether there are things that we need to do that maybe we haven't, or is it just going to be, okay, life goes on and you can get pot legally and you can buy it from a store now?
Yeah, I think you can buy it from a store. That's one thing. But I think the other piece that comes with this, we need to think about those families that were impacted by incarceration for selling weed. And now it's free and it's legal, right? So what about those families?
They're going through and purging, though, on some of the misdemeanor charges.
Some of it. But I think there has to be more changes to families at generational impact, right? Because when somebody is incarcerated for decades,
but it was against the law. I disagree. It was against the law. They broke the law. Now we're making it legal, and we're going to purge simple possession marijuana charges from those people's records. But I'm not looking for any compensation for those who may have broken the law in the past. I mean, gambling.
People are making billions now selling weed, right? Yeah. And poor white and black and brown are still adversely impacted by selling weed. And now the majority of white folks are making $1 billion selling weed, the same thing.
It's not going to happen in Rhode Island. It's not going
to
be the
case. We have
cow.
To have a just society where...
So you're looking for compensation.
Families that are adversely impacted by selling weed and should also benefit because they need to be more accessed, right? Where's the equity?
Well, nonviolent drug offenders should never be incarcerated for any reason before, whether or not it was legal or illegal. I mean, that's really the bigger issue with this. You know, to your point, I think the people who are ending up with this lottery for the licenses themselves are not the people who were as disproportionately impacted by the enforcement prior to the legalization. I think the biggest solution to addressing that issue was to get rid of all regulations around cannabis. I think this is something that should be regulated like a tomato plant. This is something that people are going to be allowed to grow up to 3 plants at their home anyway. We've created a situation where we've created a bunch of regulatory process, added taxes to it. We're essentially creating a gray market, which is not any better than the black market here in the state of Rhode Island. And by doing all of this, it's going to be, 12, 18 months before we get a recreational shop open. People have already been going to Massachusetts since 2018. We've already been dealing with all of the social issues associated with having cannabis legalized in the state of Rhode Island. I don't see much changing except for the fact that we're creating a lot of bureaucracy and expense surrounding it with the regulation.
And our taxes on the legal pot are going to be extremely high, to the extent where people who are already going to Massachusetts and paying a much lower price than we're going to be charging.
Well, the price has decreased also in Massachusetts.
Yes.
The market prices have decreased.
And the problem is that people are going to continue to go to Massachusetts instead of buying it here. It's not going to be the cash cow that I originally predicted if they're going to keep the prices up where they say they're going
to keep them. So is your recommendation, Luke, just go to your dealer?
Well, what my suggestion is, frankly, if you want to make us competitive in the legal pot market, then use some of that $600 million surplus to defray some of those high taxes we're going to be charging to keep people in the state of Rhode Island to purchase their pot as opposed to going to Massachusetts.
Let me just ask you quickly from a prosecutorial standpoint.
Serious issue.
You're a prosecutor, and there's still issues with judging whether people driving while high and all of the. Have we worked those out yet or not?
No, not at all. We have what we call drug recognition experts. They're DREs, and they're trained for a lengthy period of time out of state at a certain academy. And they're supposed to be able to tell whether somebody is driving impaired due to something other than alcohol, because you pull someone over because they're weaving and you ask them to take a breath test and it comes up zeros. Well, now you need to know what this is in their system, and we do not have a foolproof way. And the problem with the DREs, even though they are, I believe, very, very important, they're not going. A lot of judges don't like to accept a subjective testing by a police officer.
But I agree with you, Lisa, that we could do a whole show on it. The war on drugs was just an abject failure and did incarcerate and affected generations of families for stuff that now we look at as
legal. And I didn't mean to dispute. I agree with everything you said about, I did, except for the recompensation aspect.
Yeah, I mean, families are hurting, right? And we got to do more. You talk about the surplus earlier, right? If you're going to generate funds from selling weed, then we got to go to those families that are impacted, that are struggling, right? We got to lift people out of poverty. And well, most of these people that have these records, they can't get a job. And if they get a job, it's a low-paying job, right? So we have to think about how do we drive structural changes that lifts all Rhode Islands up, not just some of us.
Final thought on that?
Well, you're trying to lift people out of poverty. How about getting all the roadblocks out of the way? To Lou's point, if we're dealing with the competition from Massachusetts. We're already driving over the border. I live in the East Bay to get gas, groceries, retail, anything like that. And if just from recently, Jaisal Correa was in the news for losing his appeal because he was shaking down licensees or people in Massachusetts. There was a report from WPRI about the head aide from the speakers who was involved with the grow operation. This is something the regulation is not doing anything to prevent, and it's just costing us a lot of money in the end.
All right, to be continued, let's do outrage and or kudo. Mr. Polian, do you have one this week?
Yeah, I actually have. I hate kudos, you know that.
Yeah, so do I, so go ahead.
My outrage is, and shout out to Peggy Dudley, who was a viewer of this show, who called me out because I said Joe Biden shut down the pipeline when he got into office on the first day. The reality is she's right. He didn't shut it down because it was never flowing, but he did prevent us, by all of his actions, from becoming energy independent. We saw that he went to Saudi Arabia, the president did, with hat in hand, trying to get them to pump more oil. Because he had called them a pariah, they flipped him the bird and they said, no, we're going to reduce our production by 2 million barrels. Long and the short of it is now he wants to go to Venezuela, home of a dictator, a human rights brutal person, and he wants Chevron to drill there.
Who says we're not responsive to our viewers? Thank you to Peggy Dudley. Billy, what do you have?
We touched on this a little bit earlier. I mean, where you live in New England, it gets cold every single year. We had a huge disaster last year with the Nilo Hotel. The fact that the homeless crisis is a perennial issue this year is really upsetting about the McKee administration. They've been in a position to know that this is a campaign promise to get these people housed before Thanksgiving. Now we have people perpetually living in tents, and there doesn't seem to be any plan in effect right now. You know, libertarians believe that this should not be a government issue. This should be handled by private individuals. And this is just a perfect example of, you know, the 9 scariest words in the human language is I'm from the government and I'm here to help. We got millions of dollars and we don't seem to be helping anybody. And that's unacceptable.
Lisa, you get the last minute.
Yeah. What is happening with our school system in Providence? I am absolutely outraged about that. We need stronger leadership and we need changes. Because
there seems to be a little bit of infighting going on, too.
Lots of fighting. The school board, parents are shut out. Our kids need to be safe. They need to be able to be learning, and they need to be in an environment that is supportive.
How much longer do you give the takeover?
I said the takeover has failed. I've not seen anything to date that shows me that they have a hand around what needs to happen. We need to get back into the city of Providence. I reside in the city of Providence. I have 2 sisters that are school teachers in the city of Providence, and we need leadership. And the governor needs to, in my opinion, all of these people that have failed our kids, they need to be gone. We've given them too long of a time to turn this around, and it's not working. Hopefully the new mayor comes in January, will not carry through what Gina started, but really think about our kids and our families.
All right. We will be all over that in January. Folks, thank you for joining us. Billy, nice to have you back.
Thank you.
And Lou and Lisa, always good to see you. Folks, if you don't catch us Friday at 7 or Sunday at noon, check us out online. And all of our shows are archived at ripbs.org/lively. We appreciate your loyalty to the show. We will be back here next week. And join us as the Lively experiment continues.
A Lively experiment is generously underwritten by.
Hi, I'm John Hazen White Jr. For over 30 years, A Lively Experiment has provided insight and analysis of the political issues that face Rhode Islanders. I'm a proud supporter of this great program and Rhode Island PBS.